Very pleasant good morning to all of you today. Hope you rested well. Yes, I brought the weather. I packed it up in Nashville and put it in the car and just brought it down here for you. So nice and cool this morning and bright sunshine. In contrast to yesterday, it rained on me the whole way down here yesterday. Just poured all the way through Louisiana. But I made it, and I'm glad to be here. I was here last in 2011. I had to go back and check that and see when that was. I'll tell you when it was. It was when this whole area was on fire. I don't know if you remember that or not. Back in 2011, I mean, everything around here was burning up. And roads were closed, and my wife was with me that particular time, and we'd wake up in the hotel over here, and it just everything smelled like smoke because of the whole area. And sometime while I was here, I had a polo shirt. My son-in-law's a fireman, and I had an old polo shirt he'd give me, and I think it said Nashville Fire or something like that on it. And we were at one of the restaurants, and they were going to give my meal free. And I said, no, I'm not a fireman. I'm not a fireman. But that's when that was, 2011. Time gets away. It's good to be back with you, and good to see all of you again. Thank you for your kindness, your invitation. Turn to Philippians 4 and verse 8. Would you do that in your Bible? Philippians 4 and verse 8. I want to talk about the verse that will change your life. And there are a lot of verses that will do that. But I've chosen this one. Because I think that if we would employ what Paul is telling us to do in this verse, that it would be life-changing for all of us. Let's read it together. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Let's start this morning by asking you a question. How important is your thinking? You say, well, I never thought about that. Well, there you go. If you are what you eat, and there is truth to that, more importantly, you are what you think, and there is Bible for that. Proverbs 23 and verse 7, as a man thinks within himself, so is he. What that says to me is that what you think about is very important. So back to my original question. What do you think about? How important is your thinking? Well, Paul tells us what to think about in Philippians 4 and verse 8, or at least he gives us some boundaries. He gives us some perimeters here. He says you need to be thinking about things that are true, as opposed to false, as opposed to rumor. I was talking with a lady the other day who said something kind of preposterous, and I said, how do you know that's true? She said, well, I read it on the internet. Well, there you go. He said, why don't you think about things that are true? And honorable as opposed to dishonor, and right as opposed to wrong, and pure as opposed to impure, and lovely and good and excellent. He said, these are the kinds of things you need to be thinking about, he said. And I'll tell you, if we did that, it would change our lives. I think most of us are absolutely oblivious to the way we think. In other words, we don't think about what we think about. But it is either or. Either you're going to be motivated to think God-honoring thoughts that lift you up to a higher level, or you're going to be motivated to think things that come from a different source. Now, a lot of what goes on in life, you can't control. You can't control what other people do. You can't control what other people say. You can't control the weather. You can't control road construction. You can't control these kinds of things. But you have 100% complete control over the thoughts that roll around in your head between your ears. And Paul says, if we're going to make any kind of positive life change, this is where it starts. He said the same thing in Romans 12 and verse 2. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed, how? By the renewing of your mind. It all starts with the way you think. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the degree to which you enjoy life. Did you know that? There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the kind of atmosphere that settles in over your home and your marriage and your family. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and how well you connect and interact with other people. What was it Solomon said? Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of your life. He's saying the same thing. What you think about shapes who you are. What you think about is important. Now then, do you know what limits us as people? What limits us as people is not what we generally think. What limits us as people is not our past. Because last time I checked, we all have one. We all have things in our past that we would like to go back and get a redo. We'd like to go back and do over. We've all made mistakes. So what limits us is not our past. What limits us is not our present. I don't know anybody whose circumstances are just 100% perfect all the time. I don't know anybody. What limits us is what we keep telling ourselves over and over and over again. It's what we keep communicating to ourselves. It's this self-talk. It's these thoughts that get stuck in here between these ears. And Paul says, listen, you need to discipline yourself. If you're going to be a Christian, you need to discipline yourself. And self-discipline starts with disciplining your thinking. He said, you need to dwell on these things. You need to think about this. And think how different we would be if only we would engage the Philippians 4 and verse 8 principle. Think how we would impact the people around us, our family, our friends, our business associates, our brethren. Think how we would impact the people around us if only we would engage the 4:8 principle. Jesus said in Matthew 5 and verse 16, let your light shine among others that they may see your good works. And my point this morning is, good works start with good thoughts. You can't have one without the other. Now, you know who wrote this? Well, Paul wrote it. Anybody know where he was? What? He's in jail. You ever visited a jail? I mean, as an outsider. Clarify that. Not a pleasant place. And it wasn't pleasant for him either. If anybody was justified, from our way of thinking, if anybody was justified in being negative, it would have been Paul. Unfairly accused, tossed in jail, facing an unknown future, and yet he writes this little letter of Philippians, and it's all about joy. Every few verses, he keeps coming back to that theme of joy. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. I mean, it is joy, rejoice, joy, rejoice, all through this little letter. You would think that a man facing his circumstances would write a letter that kind of started out, woe is me. Life is unfair. You all don't know how hard I have. I'm chained to these old prison guards. The food here is terrible. I'm not free to come and go, you know, like you are. He doesn't write that way at all. He makes a deliberate decision, a proactive decision to discipline his mind. and think God-honoring thoughts. Why? Because his thoughts were a reflection of his faith in God. And so are yours. Your thoughts are a reflection of your faith in God. Let me tell you a little bit about me. I have no talent. I'm not very mechanically inclined. I can't fix stuff. Somebody calls my house and they'll say, "Is Wilson handy?" And my wife says, "No." Because when something breaks, I'll say, "Let me try to fix that." She said, no, please don't. Please don't. Let's call so-and-so. Because usually when I try to fix something, it makes it work. I'm just not mechanically inclined. I'm not musically inclined. All of my family's got the music gene. They either play an instrument or they sing or do both. And everybody gets together and they're doing all of this. And I start singing along and they stop and they go, no. Just listen. Because I'm just not very musically inclined. I just, you know. And I'm not into technology. I'm just not, that's just not me. I'm not very technical. Some people get all excited about the latest little gadget or deal or whatever, and that just doesn't bother me a bit. My friend David Holder up in Fort Worth says, my idea of an upgrade is to go to Office Depot and get a new legal pad. That's about it. That's about right. In fact, you know what this is? Huh? Go ahead and pass that down. Y'all might want to look at that. What is it? A flip phone. I bet your phone doesn't flip. See, I have a phone that is called a retro mobile device. Now, I have another phone, but I like that one. Because, you know, you ever seen people drive an old car and it just turns heads? See, I can use this phone, it turns heads. Retro mobile device. And my kids keep saying, "Dad, you got to upgrade. You got to, 21st century, come on." I left my phone in a place of business and I went back and I got home and I couldn't find my phone. And I'm like, man, I left it there. And so I went back the next day and there it was, right where I left it. And I told my son, I said, "Luke, that proves people are honest." He said, "Dad, it proves nobody wants your old phone. That's what that proves." He said, you've got to upgrade. He said, "You have to. They don't even make those anymore. You know, I mean, come on." Well, my point this morning is sometimes all of us need to upgrade. And what we need to upgrade is our thinking. We need to upgrade our thinking. And I'll tell you the passage that helps me with that more than any. 1 Thessalonians 5, 16, 17, 18. 1 Thessalonians 5, 16, 17, 18. Rejoice how often? What? Always. Pray how often? Without ceasing. Give thanks, verse 18, for some things. Everything. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. There's your upgrade. Now somebody says, "How can I rejoice always if my life is not always great? How can I give thanks for everything if there's things going on for which I'm not very thankful?" Well, yeah, you have to understand. Upgrading to a Philippians 4:8 kind of thinker or a 1 Thessalonians 5, 16, 17, 18 kind of thinker doesn't mean that your life is just going to be 100% great. That's not what that means. The one who wrote it, Paul's wasn't. And yet, in spite of life's hardships, in spite of life's difficulties and injustices, this man made a decision to emphatically and without hesitation wrap his arms around the living God and stand upon his promises. That's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. Because your joy is an outside sign of an inside faith. Let me say that again. Your joy is an outside sign of an inside faith. We teach the little children to sing, I've got the joy, 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 where? Down in my heart. You know what Solomon said? In Proverbs 15, 13, he says, if it's in your heart, it's going to show up on your face. If it's not showing up on your face, maybe it's not in your heart. It's a way of acting. It is a way of conducting my life that says, I may not understand everything that is happening here. I may not understand God. I may not understand His timing. But I've made a decision that I'm going to trust Him even when I don't understand it. And that's our theme this week. Trusting Him in difficult times. Trusting Him when you don't understand. You know, ladies and gentlemen, joy is not just some distant destination you hope to reach one day. I understand about heaven. I get that, the ultimate destination of joy. I understand all of that. But what about between here and there? What about right now? How is it God wants His people to live on this earth in such a way that is distinctive from the way everybody else lives? My wife always is quick to remind me, wait a minute, the joy is in the journey. The joy is in the journey. And I think sometimes we forget that. I think sometimes we settle for less than what God wants from us just because our life isn't. The majority of the people around us are okay with mediocrity. They're okay with average. They manage their mediocrity. And I'm saying to you, that's the opposite of the verses we've read this morning. God wants us to live a little better than that. He wants us to live higher than that. Because He wants our faith to rest upon something much stronger. You know, God places joyful, thankful living right in front of our face. Right in front of our eyes. Right within our grasp. And we fail to see it. We fail to grasp it. My wife gets put out with me sometimes because I'll go to the pantry. And I'm standing there and I'm looking for the peanut butter. And I holler out and I'll say, where's the peanut butter? And she says, third shelf, eye level. And I'm looking and I'm looking and I'm looking. And folks, I'm telling you, it is not there. So that's when I employ the whiny husband voice. Don't tell me you don't use this. The whiny husband voice that hollers throughout the house and says, I can't find it. So she stops what she's doing in the back bedroom and comes into the kitchen, into the pantry, and she reaches in and hands me peanut butter. And you know where it was? Third shelf, I love it. Right in front of my face. And she walks off saying, muttering something about husbands and blah, blah, blah. And you've heard that too. And I wonder sometimes if God isn't like that when He takes it and He puts joy right in front of our face, right within our grasp. And He says, you don't see that? You don't see the abundant life? You don't see how I have made it possible for you to live higher and better than others? Because of the hope that you have? Why don't you begin to show this in your life? If you can't get excited about the promises of God, if you can't get excited about the exceeding abundant life that Jesus offers, that I don't know what it would take. But I'll tell you this. If all of us work to upgrade our joy, we'd be a lot more fun to be around. If you focused your thinking within the boundaries of Philippians 4 and verse 8, everything around us would become more peaceful. Your marriage will get better.
Because
you start focusing on the good traits of your spouse rather than nitpicking all of their faults. Your family life would get better because you begin to realize how brief is the window of opportunity that you have with your children. Your relationship with your coworkers would get better. Your relationship with your brethren would get better. Your relationship with God would get better. I don't know if you know this or not. I don't know that you've thought about this or not. But your thoughts are showing. You can't hide them. The secret conversations we have with ourselves daily shape who we are. Little by little by little. I read the statistic the other day. It said the average person thinks 50,000 thoughts per day. Now, I read that and I thought, what crazy person counts those? That is absurd to me. You know, there's some statistics that you kind of read and you go, wow, and then you go, oh, wait. Then I read a statistic that put that statistic into perspective. It said 50% of all statistics are made up. So, how many thoughts does the average person have in a day? I don't know. And I'll tell you, I don't think anybody else does. So let's just say the average person, you and me, the average person in a day has a bunch of thoughts. There you go. We have a whole lot of thoughts. And these thoughts, our way of thinking, either draws us nearer to God or takes us further from Him. It'll be one or the other. But make no mistake about it. Your thoughts are showing. There's Bible for that. Jesus said in Luke 6, verse 45, He said, the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. Somebody says, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I spoke before I thought. No, you didn't. It's impossible. Now, you could argue and say, I didn't think about that long enough. I should have thought about that more before I opened my mouth and inserted foot. But if you spoke it, you only spoke it because you first thought. You can't divorce your thoughts from your speech. You can't divorce your thoughts from your actions. And that's why the majority of thoughts we have today simply tend to be repeats from yesterday. And that's why it's hard for us to change. As a man thinks within himself, so is he, so he becomes. And that's why Paul says, look, if you're going to make any change, it's got to start with the way you think. It doesn't matter what kind of change you need to make. Maybe you need to make relational changes in your life with your family. Maybe you need to make physical changes and improve your health. Maybe you need to make financial changes. Maybe you need to make spiritual changes. I don't care what kind of change you need to make. It doesn't matter. If you don't fix what's in here, the results are not going to be any different. In other words, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So when God made us, you go back to the book of Genesis and you begin to read how God made us. He made us and He gave us a free will. You know, Don gets up and talks about, we're a free moral agent. Well, we are. What does that mean? It means God doesn't make you do anything. God doesn't make you do anything. You're free to do whatever you want to do. God's not going to make you take care of yourself physically. God's not going to make you read your Bible every day. God's not going to make you pray. God's not going to make you make better decisions. He's not going to make you. He's not going to force you to do anything. And He's not going to make you think right. That's your choice. That's your choice. You can choose to live with a negative mindset. You can choose to be dominated by worry and uncertainty. You can choose to be a drama king or queen if that's what you choose to do. It's your choice. Or you can choose to make a decision that says, I'm going to renew my mind so as to approve what the will of God is because I want to please Him more than anything else. You see, ladies and gentlemen, your thoughts, the way we think, can be reshaped. It can be retrained. Now, I tell people that sometimes, and I know what they're thinking. You say, yeah, my thoughts can be retrained. Yeah, haven't you heard the old expression? You can't teach an old dog what? New tricks. Okay. I drove 800 miles yesterday to tell you this. You ready? It's heavy stuff. You are not a dog. So when people say, well, what did you learn from that meeting with Brother Adams? Well, I learned I'm not a dog. There you go. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, okay. But you're not a dog. And the same Paul who wrote what he said in Philippians 4 and verse 8, you come on down, look in verse 11. Same person who wrote what he said in Philippians 4, 8 says in verse 11, not that I speak from want, for I have learned. I underline that in my Bible. I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Verse 12. I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, having abundance and suffering need. Paul said there were some things I had to learn. Maybe there's some things you and I need to learn. And if he could learn them, then I think we could learn them. You see, you and I are the product of our decisions more than we are the product of our circumstances. Let me say that again. You are the product of your decisions more than you are the product of your circumstances. I can't always choose my circumstances. Sometimes my circumstances are less than ideal. Sometimes my circumstances are not of my choosing. So I can't choose my circumstances, but I can choose my attitude toward them. I can always do that. And I'll tell you why that's important, because the attitude you choose is a reflection upon your faith. So how deep is your faith? How deep is your faith? Paul is telling us, as followers of Christ, we've got to do a better job thinking better. Anybody watch a football game yesterday? I listened to several driving along until the station would fade out, and I'd give me another one, I'd listen. And some of the games were kind of exciting and some weren't. But anyway, it depends on who your teams are, I guess. What's interesting, when you watch a football game, you get down toward the end of the game, and maybe in the fourth quarter, and the players are exhausted. They're just spent. They're tired, and the game maybe is getting away from the team. And so the coach calls, timeout, timeout, and the guys come over, and sometimes it'll be the offensive coordinator, sometimes the defensive coordinator, sometimes the head coach. They'll get in the middle of all those guys, and I mean, they'll just get in their faces, and they'll say things like, get your head back in the game. Why? Why is this coach yelling at his players, get their head back in the game? Because they've become distracted. Because they've become tired by a lot of stuff, the energy they've expended, and they're just weary and worn out and worn down. And he's reminding them, just hang on a little longer. And sometimes God sends us those reminders too. Because sometimes our mind wander. Sometimes the peripheral stuff of life just has a way of wearing you down. Get your head, get your thinking back where it needs to be. Now, the secret to doing that is to make the decision to do that today. When somebody sits down with me and we talk about stuff maybe going on in their life, and they'll say, okay, I'll work on that tomorrow. Well, you've just wasted my time and yours. Because tomorrow's too late. When somebody has that mindset, I'll work on this tomorrow, they've already failed. Because God gives to each of us a gift. It is called the present of the present. It is what you do with today that counts. That's what matters. So what are you doing with today? You can't worry without thinking worrisome thoughts. You can't do that. You can't be afraid without allowing yourself to think thoughts that take you into that direction. You cannot be depressed without thinking in a way that lends itself to that. But the flip side is just as true. You cannot have hope if you don't allow your mind to dwell on hope-filled things. You cannot be a happy person if you don't think about God's blessings. You cannot be full of joy if you don't allow yourself to think thoughts of joy. That's just the way that works. But if you hang around negative people, guess what you're going to become? You're going to become a negative person. Because negative, faithless people are going to poison your outlook. They're going to zap your energy. They're going to steal your joy. In other words, if you associate with people who whine and complain and commiserate and... what does 1 Corinthians 15:33 say? Bad company what? Corrupts good morals. That wasn't written to just teenagers. Did you know that? So what we have to learn to do is we have to learn to quarantine negativity. If I go down here to the big medical center complex down here in Houston, and I go see somebody at St. Luke's, or I go see somebody at one of these huge hospitals, and I get on maybe the 10th floor and I start down, and I'm in the elevator with this one guy, and it's just two of us, and the door closes, and he starts coughing and hacking, and he says, "Oh man, I think I'm getting the flu." Now, I don't know what you're going to do, but I've already hit button number 9. I'm off. I'm out of there. I'm going to walk down 9 flights of stairs. I don't want to be anywhere near that guy. You don't move closer to somebody who says, "I've got the flu." That doesn't work. And the same thing's true of negativity. Read Numbers 13, 14. Two people had the faith. We can take the land. The others had the faithless flu. And look how it spread. Let me show you one more passage. That's the first one, right? 5 minutes? Okay. We're good. 2 Corinthians 10:5. Let's close right there. 2 Corinthians 10:5. We are destroying speculation and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. And, look at the last part of the verse. We are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Now, you read that and you tell me how important is your thinking. Take every thought captive to Christ. When our oldest son was a little boy, every Saturday night, he would drag me in front of the television, watch his favorite show. Cops. And to this day, I can sing that song, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? And you can sing it too. Every Saturday night, we'd watch that show. And he'd say, when I grow up, I want to be a cop. I want to put the handcuffs on those guys and put them in the car and take them away and take them to jail. That's what I want to do. Ever since he was a little guy, that's what he wanted to do. Well, guess what he does? Graduated from college, degree in criminal justice, and he's been in law enforcement now for over 10 years. And that's what he does. And I think about that in relation to this verse. What does that mean? Take every thought captive to Christ. It means to think about your thinking. And when you begin to think things and you're not really sure that I ought to be thinking this way, then put the handcuffs on those thoughts. And if it's not thoughts, it's actions, it's behavior, it's an attitude, whatever it is, put the handcuffs on that. And take it to the judge. Take it before Jesus. Pray about it. Go to His Word. Talk to people who have some life experience. And if you decide these are thoughts I should not be having, or an attitude or behavior I should not be manifesting, then don't just handcuff it. Incarcerate it and put it away. Why is that important? Because you are what you think. Take every thought captive to Christ. Let Him be the judge. And I tell you, if you did, it'd change your life. Galatians 6:7, you reap what you sow. Our thoughts are like little seeds that go down in the ground. The life you reap depends upon the kind of seeds you put down in the ground. And if you want a joy-filled life, you need to fix your thinking to the joy-producing promises of God. Because your thoughts reflect upon your faith. Maybe it's time all of us made the decision to upgrade our thinking. Well, y'all been very kind to me this morning. And, it's only 8 after. I'm done. So y'all can...